We are now recording audio only. Welcome all. And this is our last presentation of our last meeting of the season. We will be running the Q&As all summer, but for the regular monthly meeting, this will be the last one of the season. In a moment, I will be muting everybody. You will not have the ability to unmute yourself. Please use the chat window for questions or hold them until after the presentation when we'll open up the microphones for all. I would like to welcome Mariana Cortez, CEO of the One Laptop Per Child, an organization with roots over 15 years old, is dedicated to technology and education in third world nations. Mariana has been nominated for the Excellence in Positive Change Award by Global Thinkers Forum and is the founder of Edularity, a global hub of experts and researchers of knowledge seeking a paradigm shift in traditional education. This evening, Mariana is going to give us a presentation on the origins of EdTech and let us know how other technologies weave their way from the same beginnings. With that, for those who still have their microphones unmuted, please join me in welcoming Mariana Cortez. Mariana, the podium, so to speak, is yours.
Thank you so much. I'm super excited.
If you just break for just a second, what I'm going to do is mute all, and that's going to mute you as well.
Okay.
But you have the ability to unmute yourself. So if you go ahead and unmute yourself now, and then the podium is yours.
Thank you very much. I'm super excited, probably a little bit nervous. I've not done a presentation probably in more than a year, so my apologies, though this is my second language also, so apologies if I make any mistakes. So I wanted to ask a question. How many of you have heard of someone called, you are in the tech business, so probably you have, Seymour Papert?
Okay, anybody can use the yes, no buttons in the participant window if you want, because you're all muted. I see two no's, I see no yeses, I see three no's. So I take it that this is not a commonly known thing.
That's very interesting. Okay, so one more question. If I say artificial intelligence, what do you think about? What is the first thing that comes into your mind? Probably if you write it in the chat.
Yeah, we can look in the chat to see that I have nothing currently in the chat on that. Stuart Bruce says he thinks of himself.
Okay.
Robots.
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
Two people say robots.
Yeah, that's a common question. Killer robots.
Killer robots. The future.
Okay.
Machine
Facebook.
Learning. Facebook.
Okay, very interesting. Okay. So the intention of this is to share a little bit of what does artificial intelligence, the Media Lab, MIT, Seymour Papert, One Laptop Per Child, Arnold, have in common. Okay, so let me share my screen. Thank you for your answers. Okay, give me one sec. Okay, so this are the origins of EdTech. Have you heard the term EdTech in the past? Yes, no?
A couple of yeses, I guess. Mariana, could you actually go into screen show mode? We're seeing your deck on the side there, too.
I will. Give me one sec. Okay, there.
Great, okay. That's good. Thanks.
No, thank you. Okay, EdTech means education technology, okay? And it's pretty common, probably more common in the past 10, 15 years. And it become very common, especially through governments and nonprofit organizations around technology or education, after One Laptop Per Child was announced. I'm not going to give all the details unless you want me to, but I think we need to address the most important thing, the origins. So One Laptop Per Child, it's a nonprofit organization based in the US. Worldwide, it has presence in more than 60 countries. we have given more than 3 million laptops to children around the world in developing countries. And with one purpose. The purpose was not to give a laptop, but to give access to learning, not to technology, not to schooling, but to learning. And this is going to be clarified during the presentation. So let me tell you a little bit about the history. This is Nicolas Negroponte with Kofi Annan in Davos in 2005. They both were announcing the One Laptop per Child project. This is a mock-up computer. And the intention was, the original intention was, to give access to learning to every child through a laptop or through digital technology to every child in the developing countries so that they could have the same opportunities to access to the world of learning through a low-cost laptop with connectivity, just as they had by the time in the first world countries. Now, as I said, this was the intention, but not the laptop was the main thing. The learning and why. Okay, we have presence in many countries. These are the type of photos and experiences that we have had. This is a picture in Peru. There is just sources. I'm sorry. There are two sources of light right here in this picture. One, you can see the window. There's light coming to the grandmother, and the other one is the computer. The interesting thing here is that this computer, when it was night, was the only source of light in the house. So many family members gathered around the child, and some of them learned to read or got jobs because technology was there. Let me share another one. These are schools with no walls, no ceilings. The intention was that the computer could charge with low consumption through solar panels. Common laptops charge with 20 or 40 watts. These laptops were built to charge with 2 watts, so they could use solar panels. But as I said, I don't really want to go into the detail of old PC. What I want to show is that there was a meaning. Yes, there is a tool. The computer was a tool. An old PC by 2005 needed to build its own laptop because neither Microsoft or Intel, no one else wanted to build a laptop for children. So Nicolas Negroponte, after talking to Bill Gates, to Steve Jobs, to so many others who said no, he needed to go back to the Media Lab and ask the students and teachers of the Media Lab to build a laptop robust enough, rugged, low consumption, which could share or could have the capabilities of connectivity between them, even where there was no electricity through mesh net. So it has specific capabilities, especially for children. But this is not the important thing. The intention was that through the click of a button, children could access the source code of the software. Imagine doing this in 2005 when laptops had a cost of $1,000. So children in third world countries couldn't access really technology to do that. And the intention to have access to source code is coming right now. What does this thing have in common? Artificial intelligence, mathematics, math ethics, philosophy, epistemology, technology, education technology, programming, coding, Lego, learning, the Makers Movement, Cognitive Science, and One Laptop Per Child. Does anyone know who they are?
People can throw it into the chat window if you have an idea.
Chris, I think you do.
No. I don't actually know.
No? Okay. So I would have to say that probably these two men are both some of the most important minds in the 20th century, I would say. The first one, the one to your left, it's Marvin Minsky. He's the father of artificial intelligence. The one to his right is Seymour Papert. Who are they actually? Seymour Papert was South African. He was a mathematician. He was a philosopher, epistemologist, very hard study, learner of the cognitive sciences, researcher. And of course, many of you have heard of Marvin Minsky, father of artificial intelligence. And I love to say that if Marvin Minsky is the father, Papert, I don't want to say he's the mother, but probably the co-father of artificial intelligence. Okay, so they met after they both were researching something really similar, how the brain learned. So after doing a lot of research of how the brain learned through technology, through digital technology, probably around the 60s, 1960s, when, if we go back then, computers were as big as a room and they needed to be refrigerated. They have not huge capacity and we needed to program through cards, making holes in cards. So they were studying how the brain changed, learn by making holes to cards, actually. So through that process of programming and doing that research, they connected, they both met at MIT, and after meeting, the Media Lab was created. By then, it was not called Media Lab. It was called the Artificial Intelligence Lab, now the Media Lab, okay? So they continue studied how the brain learned. But if you really want to do some research on how the brain learn, either you gather a lot of people, a lot of children especially, to understand, let's put it this way, a motherboard that has not been corrupted, that's the brain of children, okay? So you would have to study a lot of children through, let's say, 60, 70, 100 years, that would be difficult. So what they did was try to recreate some ways of how the brain processed certain things, put that into a machine, and try to make it exponential. You know that we need some time to understand some things, but machines could actually learn faster. They did it in a machine to scale it and to do it or research it exponentially. So this is the beginning of artificial intelligence. Try to replicate the intelligence of the human brain in a machine. Now we name it machine learning and deep learning, and we've been doing different things, but it is not necessarily robots per se, or not necessarily Cambridge Analytics. These are, let's say, corrupted versions of what really artificial intelligence was or wanted to be at its origins. So this is what artificial intelligence is. We have discussed this. This is Seymour Papert. They both continue to work together doing research on artificial intelligence, but Marvin Minsky concentrated more on the science, on the machine learning, on the deep learning, and the technology per se. Seymour Papert concentrated more on the learning of children and how digital technology could help children to develop higher level thinking skills. I will explain this later on in the presentation. So right here, you see Seymour Papert doing some research in Africa. This is Senegal in 1982. So probably by the 70s, Seymour and Marvin, but especially Seymour, used to say that in the future, we should give a computer to every child in the world so they could learn. But we will understand what computer means. Okay. Of course, by then, everybody laughed at him, except for a few people. One of them was Nicolas Negroponte. So in around 2005, they created one laptop per child. They were actually doing it around the 90s already. To continue doing some research on how the brain worked, how the brain learned, especially with a non-corrupted motherboard, which is the brain of a kid, Seymour created a software that probably most of you have heard of, Logo. So Logo was the baby of Seymour Papert and some of his students. Have you heard of Logo? Probably some of you have. Yes, of course.
I have, yes. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of the people who have been around for a while have. It does date back quite a bit.
Of course, yeah. So there were many versions of Logo. Here it is. Then Seymour and their students created this semi-robot, semicircle, which they called Turtle. So the Turtle was a physical conception to do what the turtle, which was the icon, used to do in the screen, which basically was this, correct? Go forward, 50 steps, turn right, 90 degrees. So the turtle, the robot, used to do this. Now, when doing this, Lego, the company making blocks, understood that they were doing something very interestingly regarding learning. By putting together things, they were constructing somehow some type of physical learning. So they called Seymour, and Seymour by then, let me share something with you, by then had already written this book, Mindstorms. Children, Computers, and Powerful Ideas. Okay, so Lego called Seymour Papert, and they said, what could be a good concept to mix what you're doing with Lego, your turtle, I'm sorry, with Logo, your turtle, and with our blocks? So they created something very similar to Logo, but with blocks, which we now might seem very similar to Scratch. Okay? So they created different versions, or the origin or original versions of this robot, the Mindstorms. And it is called Mindstorms because of this book, in honor to Seymour Papert. So one of the reasons for Seymour Papert not only to create Logo, but to try to make it more graphic, was that he used to say that children could understand mathematics by creating micro worlds when they were programming and coding. And one of the reasons is that he used to say that math and mathematics were not the same. Let me show you how.
The philosophy behind Squeak is that learning math and science is essential to understanding the world of today. The goal is not to turn all kids into scientists, but to raise a generation of people able to use more than common sense to understand the world around them.
What they teach in school, I like to call math, as opposed to mathematics. Mathematics is one of the great jewels of achievement of the human mind. Math is a lot of boring stuff that you make kids do with pencils and squared papers and filling in numbers. There's no relation. While it's true that most people in math class don't learn much math, most kids in French class don't learn much French. But we don't say that they're not Frenchly minded. We don't say they don't have a head for French, because we know that they grew up in France, they'd learn French perfectly well. And I think that my image of learning mathematics is, if we all learned mathematics in Mathland, we would all learn mathematics perfectly well. And how can we create Mathland? That's really what it's about. I think that what we can do with the computer is allow individuals to find their own way of coming to terms with what mathematics is and seeing it in a way that matches their passion and their intellectual styles.
Alan Kay and Seymour Papert have been working for years on this very problem, a way to create a playland or natural environment for learning the important ideas of science and math. But why is this so important?
Because that playland used to be Mathland, and that Mathland was Lego, was Logo, was, as you might see now, or is now, Scratch. Okay? The intention was to build in the digital world with technology different opportunities to understand and build new ways to learning, to constructing knowledge through the process. The process is the important thing, not the goal. So, just to mention this very quickly, Seymour Papert used to, do you know who that guy is? The one on the left? That's more common. No. Okay. His name, Jean Piaget. Jean Piaget, still in Harvard, we can hear a lot of psychologists blaming him for, let's say, standardizing kids or putting them in a box by saying kids around 4 years can only from this to this, and in 5 years can only this from here to here, and in first grade, 6 years can only do from here to here. And Jean Piaget understood that, and he knew that it was not his research that did that. It was the educational community, which we all have very standardized minds by scholarships, subjects, separating everything, putting everything in a box. So he called Seymour Papert and he said, you are the only one who can understand what I actually tried to do cognitively with my research. As an anecdote, I would have to say that Seymour at the beginning said no to his invitation to talk, because he was also very angry to Jean Piaget, because he also thought that he had standardized the cognitive processes and how children used to think. They talked, and actually he understood that Jean Piaget wanted something really different, and they both created something new, which is called constructionism. You have probably heard of constructivism from Vygotsky and Jean Piaget, but constructionism is Seymour's idea of taking all that but constructing the knowledge through technology. And thinking about technology is not about digital technology only. Technology, as Alan Kay used to think about it, is anything that was developed after we are born. And so many others think that technology is anything that can help us solve a problem. So in those terms, using technology, any type of technology, we can create, build, construct knowledge. So this is the intention of the physical part of the programming, seeing it happen. But how does it happen? When you code, most of you know this, and the program doesn't run, you should all go back, revise, and then supervise where the mistakes are. Correct, and then run again. That going back and forward makes some cognitive processes, the debugging, help us create higher level thinking skills. Making mistakes and correcting them by finding them, it's a very important process in the learning process. First, by coding, by programming, you think to think. If there are any mistakes, you reflect. When you find the problem, you solve the problem. You understand where the problem was, analyzing, and then learning happens. This is part of the cognitive science that through artificial intelligence, technology, problem solving, mathematics, creating micro worlds. Seymour Papert and Marvin Minsky were doing some research and were trying to create opportunities for children and individuals all around the world to construct knowledge. And this is what happens. He used to say, well, not he. Actually, this is from one of his disciples. His name is Mitch Resnick, who is now the creator of Scratch from MIT. Mitch Resnick says that if we go to a kindergarten and we see a few children playing with blocks, there's a child that will imagine what he wants to do, either a castle or a towel, or a tower, not a towel, a tower or a car. He starts building, he starts creating, then he plays with it. As you always know, there are some other children around, and there's this children that will come to you and will say, can I play? So when someone else comes, you start sharing, and you share knowledge as well. So if the tower falls down, probably the new mind, the new child, will say, you know what? Probably your tower was weak because we need to build something larger or bigger or more robust on the base. So after reflecting what happened with the old construction, they will imagine a new thing. And they will create something new. And this is how learning happens. And this happens also during programming. Let me see what this is. No. We are very used to think about learning as a process that goes right directly just in a school. By being taught, we learn. But Seymour Papert, studying the science of learning, used to think a little bit differently. Let me show you how. Deconstructionism versus constructionism. Teaching
versus
learning.
We have a lot
learning.
Of words for the art of teaching. Pedagogy is the art of being a good teacher. Or in some contexts, you call it theory of instruction. In ed schools, they often call it methods, and everybody knows that means methods of teaching. So if you want to improve your art, the art of teaching, there are courses you can take, there are books you can read. Lots of people are concerned with that. But what is the name for the art of learning? Where do you go to be a better learner, to learn how to do this? What books are there? There aren't. There are very few. There's no word for the art of learning that stands to learning like pedagogy stands to teaching. And I think this reflects an old attitude built into our very language about the nature of education. You teach something to somebody. The teacher teaches the child. The teacher's the active agent, the child's the passive recipient. And so we need, of course, for the teacher to be an expert in teaching, and the learner, well, the learner has to do what the teacher says. And it's significant that even the books on active teaching, on open education, on constructivist learning, they all direct the teacher. They tell the teacher how to set up an environment where children will do this or that. They are not addressed to the learner. And I think that's the big change, that we're creating a new environment where we have to give up. We can break away from an old pattern where children were born as learners. They learned from their own energy until they went to school. When they went to school, the first thing they had to learn was to stop learning and to begin being taught. And I think that's what we need to turn around. And I think the technology, which can go in both directions by making instructionism more dominant or by opening the doors to constructionism, to making everybody a learner, teachers and children together. And that's the vision that I get from thinking 10 years ahead or 20 years ahead of what's got to happen and applying that to what to do tomorrow. Thank you.
So this was probably around the 80s, and he's thinking about the future, not doing that. What we are doing now is doing the same with new technology. But his vision was doing something different with technology, creating those micro worlds, creating that math land, having some different opportunities. This is one of the reasons that one laptop per child was created, and I'll continue explaining. Learning can only happen when a child is interested. If he's not interested, it's like throwing marshmallow at his head and calling it eating. So the intention is not to give them the computer, but to allow them to explore, to discover, to program the process of finding their own answers, creating their own worlds. The mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be kindled. And there's a debate if it was actually Plutarch or Socrates or someone else who said this. Doesn't matter. The message is proper. So Seymour used to say, nowadays, OPC is saying it is not about technology, but what children can do with technology. Seymour used to say it is not about logo, but what children can do with logo. And the intention was to have and build, create powerful ideas. The central focus should not be on the machine, but on the mind. In the past, OPC created a machine when nobody else wanted to create a machine specifically for kids, for children. So we needed to create that. And then we needed to deploy them through governments. And I'm saying deploy them because we didn't do it directly. But we needed to concentrate on distributing the logistics. Probably 15, 20 years later, we understand that there are enough computers doing what children should do with computers, but still there's no knowledge of what either children or teachers even parents, can do with a computer as a powerful machine to build powerful new worlds. If we focus on learning, the computer would be the means of each child to have the possibility of acquiring new knowledge about himself and the world around them. And they will gain the skills and functioning of his mind. So the intention is that children become creators of knowledge rather than consumers of educational software. That was the intention, for the computer not to program the kid, but for the kid to program the computer. So this is Seymour, and he is the mind behind educational technology, Lego Mindstorms, coding, the importance of coding and programming for education and cognitive skills, about the maker movement, all the things that are said about the maker movement and why they are there, why they want to build, construct, are Seymour's. Artificial intelligence, from the fundamentals, its origins are Papert and Minsky's ideas. So after hearing about this, after 15 years or probably more, maybe from the 60s when Seymour and Marvin Minsky were studying that, have we achieved all of what they wanted through technology to develop better learning skills through cognitive skills, or are we away from what the original intention was? Are we using artificial intelligence and digital technology well enough to say that we are achieving the goal, or are we bringing new technology to old ideas? So there are 8 powerful ideas that he suggested we should do if we really want to do the second. Learning by doing. We hear a lot of this, but we not necessarily allow this or allow kids to do this, neither in the analog world or the digital world. We just have children sitting in classrooms, repeating, copying, filling books. Are they really doing? Are we allowing children to do through screen time? Are they creating? Technology, any type of technology, even a rope with knots, it's technology. And that technology could be material to build, construct, therefore to construct knowledge and ideas. Hard fun. If you go to a gym, you sweat, you really not necessarily enjoy it all the time, but that's how you gain something. When we think that we are providing software, educational software to our children, where they have to kill the number with a gun, I don't know, to guess 3 times 3, which is the proper answer, and they just shoot to the proper answer. Children are really not learning. We're fooling them. They need to have hard fun. They need to create. They need the challenge. And that educational software is not really educational. They need to learn to learn. And the process is by reading what they enjoy, by letting them discover what they enjoy, to think about thinking. There's a phrase by Papert, and sometimes you need a tequila to understand that. It's not that easy. Let me try to find it somewhere around here. I think I have it here. Cheers. No, I didn't copy it. I'm sorry, I don't have it. It's something about you cannot think about thinking without thinking about something. Something like that. I have it here. You can think about thinking without thinking about thinking about something. You cannot think about football without thinking about how to think about football. So that's the way he used to play for epistemology and learn how to think. And take your time. In a school, we are used to go, tomorrow we're going to learn math. And I'm sorry if you don't learn your timetables, because the day after tomorrow, we are going to see algebra. We're going to study something else. And we don't necessarily let students take their time to understand. And everyone is different, and we standardized everyone's time. And you can only do things right if you have done things wrong. We need to learn from mistakes, which is not necessarily what we let happen through schooling. I love this comic. You have to do yourself what you want your children to do. And we have this teacher saying to their students, I expect you all to be independent, innovative, critical thinkers who will do exactly as I say. Understanding digital fluency, but when we're talking about digital fluency, we're not talking about automatic tools. We're not talking about email or Word or PowerPoint. We are talking about what you see on your right, creating, programming, even through blocks. This is a new version of Logo and Papert's ideas. What for? To build computational thinking, algebraic thinking. Learn how to order your ideas.
Let a child learn mathematics by speaking in mathematics about things that really matter to them. So at MIT, we've given computers the power to turn motors, to make sounds, to draw pictures, and we've found ways of giving children the power to control the computer. Now they'll put their little tunes together to make bigger ones.
Sometimes I get into bugs like this, and it'll, when it was doing it in his mind, the little turtle, the little triangle thing, was on an angle, so it drew the picture on an angle.
A computer-controlled turtle is made to draw and dance by a program so simple that all children invent them in the first days of the course. Thus, the child acquires a taste for math power that grows and grows as his projects become more original, more complex, and more varied.
Debugging and constructing develop higher-level thinking skills, and that is what artificial intelligence was built originally for, not necessarily machine learning, so that children can learn anywhere, anytime, with anyone or without anyone, because learning belongs to the learner. Yes, we learn socially, but the learner owes the learning. They need to be creative to find their own solutions. So that is what all of that have in common. All of those have in common. I went very fast, I think.
No, that's fine. That was a fascinating presentation, Mariana. Thank you very, very kindly for that. We did have a couple of questions that I saw going by in the chat. Tom asked, how have smartphones affected one laptop per child as a project?
Not necessarily. There are many answers to that. Seymour Papert used to say that even though when we were creating not a, let's say, I don't want to say cheap, but not expensive laptops by then, the idea was that if we can motivate others to create less expensive technology, and if they can create non-expensive technology to reach the children who are in the furthest areas, then one laptop per child would be very happy. I think with this stage where the world is, we are achieving that. There is enough digital technology, enough computers, but not necessarily enough computers to compute. So it makes sense that old PC turns or pivots its mission, go back to the origins, and then we start spreading the message, let's say spreading the original message of what computers need to be for. Yes, it is fine that children are getting information through computers or smartphones or tablets, but on Seymour's vision, that is just programming the individual. Old PC wants people who can program or create a knowledge. So we're going back to those origins.
Yeah. So I guess it's less about the technology, but how the technology is used.
It's used.
So in the same regard, I guess, there was a question about are Chromebooks an outgrowth of one laptop per child? Do you have an opinion on that as to growth of Chromebooks?
We are working now with Chromebooks.
Oh, okay. Oh, good.
Because people think that old PC is that green machine. Yeah, we used to be that because it does have specific characteristics that we needed to have in the laptop. 10 years later, there are enough computers, vendors, distributors with technology robust enough that we can concentrate on the origins and not necessarily if a computer has certain specs or not. So if there is a company that's trying to achieve something similar to us, and they do have a similar technology we can work with, then we will work with them.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. Tom just had a comment on when you were talking about solving problems, and he says, if only solving problems were so easy, and finding a good problem question is valuable. Alan German had a comment that he loved the cartoon on E equals MA squared, E equals MB squared. That was good. So what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to, now this, unfortunately, I can't just say unmute all. So I'm going to mute all again, and I will allow participants to unmute themselves, and that includes you, Mariana. Yeah, you'll have to unmute yourself again. So everybody now has the ability to unmute themselves. So if you wanted to turn on your mic and ask any questions or make any comments, please do so. You can continue to use the chat window as well, and I will relay on any questions or comments that I see in the chat. So does anybody have a question? Mariana, you'll have to unmute yourself.
Mariana?
Yes.
I'd like to ask a question. How successful has one laptop per child been, and has it been successful in Africa or Asia, or where has it been taken up most?
Well, it has had many stages. There was a time where it was very successful in Peru until there was a paper, very massive paper that probably damaged the government right there in Peru. So they tried to avoid continue doing something with us. Then we were very successful in Rwanda. We still have presence right there with 250,000 machines right there. Of course, the project has evolved, but in Central America, one laptop per child, it's very successful. We have found, after many years and working with many countries and with different stakeholders, that working with local partners, saying non-governmental organizations, non-profit organizations in each country, it's very useful. But because what happens is that when we work directly with governments, when they change administration, the new administration tries to erase what the old one was trying to achieve. So there goes the money, there goes the computer, there goes the goals, etc. And we, not only us, but children are very affected by this because no one takes care of our computers, etc. But working through local partners, nonprofit, we train them with how they should deploy. They put the knowledge of the local context of what the local needs are, and we continue with a long-term vision. So what happens is that the nonprofits own the laptop, but they give it to children through all their school process, from first grade to sixth grade, nowadays even ninth grade, etc. And the nonprofit picks the computers every year. They clean them and they give it back to that student, one computer per student. But it is the nonprofit that owns it, so they can refurbish it and keep the maintenance. So what we have seen is that specifically in Nicaragua, in Honduras, the laptops, even the original ones, the XO1, they have been working for 9 years.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, because they were built somehow that we could easily replace some parts.
Okay. We did have a question from Timothy. Not surprising, we got technology-oriented questions coming from PC User Group. He says, before the computers were using solar panels, didn't some earlier computers use cranks to generate power?
They were the same. They were the same computers, but different projects choose to have different methods of charging. So, for example, in Uruguay, even though some schools actually did have electricity, as middle school projects, they put their children to develop cranking methods to charge the laptops. So they were having playgrounds or bicycles or things like that to charge the laptops. And the Uruguay program is very robust, and they created very interesting people. Most of them are now working in Google.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah.
Yes.
Jocelyn had a comment or a question. Are the laptops able to connect to the internet? How well does it work in remote countries?
Okay. The green laptop, the old version, it has come to an end of life. So it is not produced anymore, what we used to call the XO. Okay. That, yes, have the capabilities of connecting to Wi-Fi. But in those areas where there was no internet connection or access to internet, they used to have in one antenna, there was the Wi-Fi, the WLAN card, and the other one was to recognize the other computers to create a mesh net. So children could collaborate and even chat, even where there was no access to internet. So yes, there was a communication, and that was working pretty well in very remote areas. So at this moment, the computers that we are working which are Chromebooks, people continue to believe that Chromebooks are only online devices, which is not true. In Nicaragua, we have been working with Chromebooks for offline communities for a year, and they are working fine. So there's no problem with that. We have not yet found the solution for the connectivity or the net mesh, But Google is working on that, so we don't have to concentrate on that.
That's nice. Mark had a question. Is the one laptop per child being used in North America in indigenous and other remote communities?
Yes, actually, probably around 3 years ago, I'm assuming the one laptop per child program in Canada come to an end of life, but there was a community of volunteers, a nonprofit organization, which was a partner. They were giving the laptops to Indigenous communities in Canada. So yes, and this week or next week, we are deploying some computers in a Miami school.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eldon asks, how are the costs of connection to the internet borne? Like, who is it that actually pays for internet connectivity?
It's usually the government.
Okay.
It's usually the government. And now that we're working with Google, it all depends on the project and the project needs. For example, in Nicaragua, the local partner, the nonprofit, has some liaisons with Claro and Tigo and those type of companies, and they somehow, through social responsibility, give back some of the connectivity, but it's not enough. It's never enough. So it all depends on the region, on the project, what needs to be achieved.
Okay. I presume on that front, too, Google is probably, you're hoping to be a much bigger player in that area as well, right?
Yes, though Google not necessarily provides the connectivity. They also have the connections with the governments or with specific companies, but they don't provide the internet connections. So it all depends. Okay. We work together. I'm trying to reach Elon Musk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So probably with the X space, we can try to do something.
Yeah, he's trying to put up a lot of connectivity through thousands of satellites. Alan had a question or comment. If the oldest computers have been running for a number of years, what operating system is used?
In those, there is something called Sugar, which was built in a company, in a nonprofit company called Sugar Labs by Walter Bender. He used to be also director of the Media Lab. And Sugar is an educational platform. Also had a specific technical specifications that MIT and Papert really developed for children. With the click of a button, you could see the whole source code. So any child could copy that source code and create what we now call applications. By then, we used to call them activities. And children were able to create their own activities. And this is how the Uruguay project actually worked. Many of the children used to create their activities, and they learned to program in Python probably 11, 12 years ago.
Oh, wow.
No wonder why most of them are now working where they are.
Okay. Yeah. I think Alan has been hitting Google during the presentation because he said, I guess in newer laptops or project machines, he says the OS is Ubuntu Linux or Endless OS. And for anybody who's interested, he plugged in the URL to Endless OS if anybody wants to look at that more. Martin has a question saying, Google has a lot of detractors these days. What do you think are the main things motivating Google's cooperation in these initiatives?
Money. I mean, they want to get users, obviously, right? So old PC either tried to be very purist, which didn't help us in the past, right? So I think that the way to go is create liaisons. If they are strong in something and we are strong in something and we find some other stakeholders who are doing great, achieving some goals, instead of just pointing the finger, why not constructing something together? And this is what we're trying to do. Yes, I do understand. I one of the detractors. I need to say that. In the beginning, yeah, I used to be very strong on Google and the Chromebooks, actually. But, I mean, if we can help and we can reach children and teach teachers how to use computers to create knowledge, not just to consume information, just as Papa used to say, we don't care. We just want children to do properly.
Yeah, I guess I can understand where your opposition to Google would come from in terms of they are all about consumption of information. So, Eldon.
It's very interesting. I'm sorry, and sorry to interrupt. Now that I've been working with them a little bit more, not on the surface, but having discussions with them, I found very interesting people doing very interesting things. Probably not necessarily they are announcing all the research and all the things that they are trying to achieve. But to my relief, I feel more comfortable working in specific areas, especially related to children. So I have to say I feel better.
It's very heartening. We had a comment from Eldon about brings back memories of the National Capital Freenet, which was a freenet provider in town that you could actually get free dial-up access to the internet. And so a lot of people got their feet wet on doing that. So that was a blast from the past, if you might say. Jocelyn says SpaceX Starlink will allow fast internet connection anywhere in the world. That's going to be a problem for authoritarian governments. Yes. We have a bunch of people.
We say that, but I need to say I'm very close to blockchain as well. My experience with blockchain has been that, yeah, decentralized, et cetera, but most of the people now working in blockchain are doing exactly the same way we're doing with education technology, bringing the old way of thinking to the new technology. So I hope, we really hope that that happens, but usually most of the people or the majority are just doing old stuff with new things. So we'll see.
Yeah, okay. That's all I really see in terms of questions at this point. Again, if anybody wants to, you can unmute yourself and ask verbally.
Hi, it's Corrine. Hi, thank you very much, Arianna. What I'm interested in is the aspect that you've shared with us in terms of the using technology and having the students become active in creating their knowledge, right? They're creating their knowledge. Has these techniques that the children have developed been shared more broadly, for example, in education systems in North America, for example, or even, can you give us some examples of that?
Yeah, I would have to say not necessarily through systems, because systems either don't understand what Papa was trying to say or to achieve, or they don't want to. I don't want to be like thinking about complots, et cetera, and not at all. I'm just saying people not necessarily understand Papert's ideas and Minsky's ideas. And to start understanding, I would suggest either to find anything, read anything about Papert. One thing will take you to the other. You can look for papert.org. You'll find a lot of his papers. You can also start with this. After writing this book, Mindstorms, he wrote something else, which is called The Children's Machine. I have the Spanish version. The English version is really good because it actually talks about how people misunderstood his ideas right here. And right here, you can find a lot of examples of what they were trying to achieve and how to let people create their own ideas, especially children, but not only. Also, there is one new book, new probably 2 or 3 years, by some of the disciples and collaborators of Minsky, not necessarily Papert. They do talk a lot about education, learning, one laptop per child, and Papert in this book. but it is about Marvin Minsky on education. The name is Inventive Minds. You will find plenty of ideas and how to approach learning and constructing knowledge from this book. And of course, obviously, I cannot leave out The Society of Mind from Marvin Minsky. The Society of Mind is a book, you can find it a little bit shorter, but it's a book that will present a chapter per page, just one chapter, and it will talk about a lot of things around the mind. It's a very good foundation to do that. And if you're interested in this book, you can also look The Society of Mind in YouTube by Marvin Minsky, and you will see a playlist or a series of lectures given by Marvin right there at the MIT. So it's very interesting.
Okay, for anybody who's interested, a couple of those I caught, and so I gave Amazon links for the books of The Children's Machine at Amazon and Innovative Minds at Amazon. Right. So if anybody's interested, you can at least check it out there. So
okay. I can see something here saying Montessori school had similar ideas. Yes, but let's not forget. I mean, I've been researching learning and alternatives to schooling for probably 20 years. And there's one difference between Papert and Montessori. First of all, Montessori, through science, obviously, she tried to create methodologies, pedagogy, to teach children which were cognitively disadvantaged, which Seymour Papert is doing is trying to understand learning as a science for anyone. So there are a few differences that I'm not saying Montessori is bad. I'm just saying that it's more pedagogy, free pedagogy, let's say it. But in terms of Papert, he's concentrating on learning, the one that belongs to the learner, not necessarily on the teaching. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, we're getting a lot of thank yous in the chat. We're getting from Wayne, thank you for a great presentation and informing me. Jocelyn said, thanks a lot. Wish your movement to keep expanding. So, yeah, all really good. Do we have any other questions for Mariana? We have another thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Bob Walker here. You raised some very interesting issues and whatever, and especially about the way that science and mathematics is taught to kids and to get them to understand. And one of the big issues I can see in that in North America and probably a lot of other parts of the world is in grade school and even in high school, a lot of the teachers that are teaching math and sciences are liberal arts graduates. And not people who science and technology and engineering and math is their thing. So it's very hard for a teacher whose heart really isn't in it to really energize the students and turn them on. I remember in school that I get a really great history teacher, he can really bring life to history, or a great English teacher can really bring life to Shakespeare, which is otherwise quite boring. But I never had any teachers that could really bring science and math to life until I got into the late years of high school. Yeah. And that's one of the problems right there is if the teachers don't really live and breathe the subject, it's hard for them to teach it well.
Yes, and it's very interesting, Papert's approach and how we all are used to see math as one thing, science as another thing, programming as something else, artificial intelligence and learning, we have to learn all these subjects, which are separate. And for him, all of this is part of a complex system, which he very friendly talks about in his books. Complexity, very friendly. And it is just part of the same system. It is all the same thing, math, mathematics, mathematica, philosophy. And when you get that glue, that link, it is just overwhelming. So, yeah, I mean, we either as technologists or with an approach to technology or teachers or mathematicians or developers, I always say that if we have not heard of Seymour Papert, we are not complete. So I hope you enjoy learning about him and reading him, and it will definitely break a lot of paradigms. That happened to me.
Yeah, definitely. It's very fascinating. And it seemed like not many people here were aware of him at the start of your presentation. So a lot of people are certainly much more aware now. So that's wonderful. Martin says, Claudette wonders what is being done to bring the parents and general public more supportive of this new approach?
So far, not much. Governments say they do, teachers say they do, but the traditional things are done. So not necessarily things that actually help children. So this is why I'm concentrating back on the fundamentals, because what we want to do is not concentrate on the distribution, on the laptop, on the manufacturing, but on teaching parents and helping general public to understand these things, the common things. What is artificial intelligence? What is learning? How to approach it? And to say, to take all that big buzz about artificial intelligence, it's just a common thing. It's just a matter of thinking about it differently.
And I will say that anybody who is trying to further the cause on this, One Laptop Per Child is a nonprofit. If you go to their website, there is a donate button at the top if you wanted to donate to the cause. And I will say that Mariana has very kindly said that in lieu of us giving her the honorarium, that she would like us to just go ahead and donate it to the One Laptop Per Child project, which we will be doing so. So if anybody else wants to also contribute to the cause, you can do so at the website.
You can see a couple of websites. One is one.laptop.org. We do have a button that says donation right there. But from that page, you will see many projects that we have had in around the world. And there's another one, onelaptopperchild.org, all together. And that's more on the donation and the services that we provide to certain projects. So you can donate through any, but we'd rather have it in the second one, onelaptopperchild.org.
Onelaptopperchild.org. I will make a note of that. We have a comment from Wayne. I will pass these books on to my son. The best learning I had is the learning I did by myself trying to solve a problem. That
correct.
From Jocelyn. And Eldon, tongue in cheek, I guess, says it's too bad that Marianne is not passionate about her subject. What a compassionate and educated and knowledgeable lady.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a shame. I wish.
Yeah. It's been really, really wonderful. Mariana, I want to thank you an awful lot for donating your time to us to bring forward your ideas and the information that you had. It's been truly a really eye-opening presentation. I really, really appreciate
I'm glad it was helpful. And I was somehow nervous because, you know, this is my second language, but I'm super happy to share more about Papert and the ideas in the benefit of children.
Yeah, you did wonderfully. I tell you, that's absolutely no problem with the language. That was wonderful. Okay, so I think with that, we'll wrap it up. And again, I would like to pass on my thanks to Mariana for coming out this evening. And you're more than welcome to revisit us anytime you want, by all means.
And any news, I will bring them to you, I promise.
That'd be great. Okay. Thank you very kindly.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chris and everyone.
Okay.
Feel free to contact me or reach me if you have any questions or want to learn something else, mariana@laptop.org.
Okay. And Mariana will be sending her presentation for posting at our website. She didn't want to do it in advance because she thought she'd be modifying the presentation right up until showtime. But we will get the deck up there along with the contents of the chat window and the audio will get posted to the website over the next few days. So
thank you so much.
Thanks again, Mariana. Okay.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay, folks, we will be taking a little bit of a break. So it's 1:45. We normally start Q&A at 9:00. We may start just a little bit early. But let's take a 10-minute break, and we'll come back and start Q&A at 8:55, 5 to 9. So I hope people will stick around for that. I will share my screen with the Q&A deck. That in just a second. So, please take a break and we'll see you in 10 minutes. The microphones are open, so if anybody wants to chat or whatever, feel free to do so.
Chris, did you stop the recording?
Oh, good. Thank you.